pornography strips men and women of their dignity.
She finally came to a point where she is convinced that she needed to leave.
I remember the look on her face.
The bomb went off, and the truth was out.
I tried to reassure her that it wasn't her. It had nothing to do with her appearance, physically. Those words just didn't seem to comfort her.
This has got to stop. This has got to stop. But always plead with God, take it away. Just do whatever you have to do, but just take it away. This has been just so devastating to me, and my wife knows, and it's destroying us.
It was definitely a death of all that I thought I had and that was real. I felt like I didn't know him anymore, and I felt fake. Everything that we had had prior to that felt artificial, and that I was believing a lie, that I didn't know him and I didn't know who he really was, and the way he felt about me was a big lie.
What a man feels as shame, she reads as rejection. So the distance she's talking about is the guy being ashamed, saying, I'm not getting close to you because you're more pure than I am. But what she reads it as is rejection. He doesn't want me. The guy's heart is crying out, please forgive me. I want to be there. I don't want to be alone. I can't take it anymore. And all she's reading is, he's rejecting me.
That's the most important thing for women to understand, is that it's not you being rejected. It's not that you're not. It's not because you're not enough and beautiful and that he doesn't find you attractive, or it's not because you're not all that he needs or wants. It's so important that we can get that, because otherwise then they're just completely defeated and makes them want to run away instead of stand by them.
Is the use of control over this thing, and I'm only gonna have a drink, two drinks. I'm only gonna look at this little while. I want to go over here. But the reality is that the next thing you know, you're further off on the path than you imagined.
We have a self-centered demand to have our needs fulfilled apart from God. There is a core element in flesh, in our fallen selves, of sinfulness that says, I'm not just desiring to be loved. I'm not just desiring for attention, affection, and affirmation. Man, I'm demanding it. And we'll get it. And if we deal with wickedness part about how we can justify and demand that our needs be met because of others, that is the core sin, that we all turn away from God and go our own way.
By keeping my struggles with pornography a secret, initially I thought we were doing the right thing, because nobody was taught about it in the churches. You know, I thought that perhaps I was the only one that was struggling. I'm sure that my wife, we've talked, and you know, she was embarrassed. She wondered what people would think, knowing that her husband is struggling with pornography and has been for a long time.
The most powerful way for God to transform my heart and to change me was for it to be known and to be public and to come out and to cause a major disruption in my life. My way would have been for him to simply take the problem away with pornography and not let anyone else find out about it.
I didn't know. I didn't realize. As long as this thing lives in secrecy, that's where it thrives.
In this moment where I was so desperate, I continued to hear God whisper to me, tell someone. And so I said, okay, I will tell someone. There's one person I can call, and it was actually a pastor friend. And I called him up, and I said, would you come over to my house? I didn't want to go to his office because I was afraid somebody might see me going to have a private meeting with this pastor, and Who knows what they would think. And so he came to my house and he sat in my living room. We were right there. And after a little bit of just chit-chat, I just began to talk about it. I said, this has been my long time battle. This has been my struggle. And he just kind of looked at me and said, you know, I understand. It's the struggle that many, many men face.
When you expose it, when you start to talk about it, that's when you start to help people. That's when you start to offer people accountability. You start to offer them resources. But as long as we continue to keep the lid on this thing, people are going to sink deeper and deeper and deeper into darkness. Thank God I found my way out.
When I said it with my own mouth, when I spoke the story to him, I've just felt such a tremendous relief and a freedom, literally a freedom came over me that I can't even, it's hard to describe. I mean, it's hard to even, you know, just this, the fact that I was able to say it and it be out there. And to finally be exposed, and to let someone else know, and from that moment on, it has been this journey of more and more freedom and more peace. As you expose the secret, dark sexual sin, it loses its power. I believe that sexual sin thrives in darkness and grows more powerful in darkness, and it, as difficult and as painful as it is to expose something so personal and so deep, it is the beginning of breaking that bondage and that stronghold that pornography can often have in a person's life.
If you're at the breaking point, then you're going to need help. You're going to need other people around you to say, I'll help you walk through this. Well, you know, call me before you're blowing up. Contact me before you're doing things that you wish you hadn't done. Do this before you activate the shame again in your life. Call me. Even if it's just one person. And that's, I had one person that I could call initially.
It's the same for women. If you isolate yourself and you don't surround yourself with women, with somebody, and you're dealing with it alone, then your resentment festers and your unforgiveness festers and you're just playing it over and over again in your mind because you don't have a release, you don't have anyone to talk to about it. So it's just as important for women to get some sort of support, whether it's another woman or a group or a couple women that you trust.
The biblical model is not just accountability, but accessibility, and where accountability crosses into something really powerful to transform us is when you're not a cop in my life, you're not a coach, but you're a cardiologist. And a cardiologist is somebody who's concerned with the welfare of my heart. Jesus said in Matthew 15 that adultery and sexual immorality come out of the heart. It's not what goes into a man that makes him do that. It's what comes out of his heart. And so I need a cardiologist. I need somebody who is going to care for and pursue and probe and be willing to make an incision in my heart so that when I come clean, when I open up, I'm not just going to sit there and bleed.
I had to count the cost and say, you know what? Maybe I'm the only man in the world. Maybe I am. That this has cost years of shame. If I add up the cumulative hours of wasted time, if I add up the years that I wasn't top of my game, opportunities I missed because this tripped me up in the middle of opportunity, my head wasn't clear. The only way to freedom is to commit to being free. I remember the day when we understood that and we were able to say together, okay, you know what? Maybe she and I are going to wrestle this the rest of our life. Maybe we're going to fight this till we leave this. Like Paul said, who will deliver me from this body of death? You know, we've got so many books about making everything better and better and better and plus, 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 you know, and sometimes it's just grueling. Sometimes life is just more than you can take. And that's why we need a Savior. That's the message here. So we just decided, you know what? God, you trusted us with children in the middle of my stupidity and all the stuff that we feel like we're completely failing at. So we're drawing the line. And whatever it takes, the generation that grows up behind us is going to run where we stumble. So we made a decision. I remember the night we did. And we held up our girls in diapers. And I said, this is the end of this. If I'm the only man who stands up in generations and says, I will not take it anymore. Before I had a son to say, yeah, it's worth fighting for, we drew the line and said, you know what, no more. I'm not going to be the man that they look back on and, God, if he'd only, you know what, and I'm not doing it all right. I'm not perfect. But if somebody can look back at me and say, yeah, great Grandpa John put a flag up while everyone else was out getting trash and doing whatever they're doing, that great-great-grandma Shelley stood up and said, ladies, here's your role in it. That was a decision we made, and that's the decision we live with now.
You have to go in with a battle mindset. I want to fight this battle. I want to win. This is the decision that I've made, that I'm not going to be defiled by the culture, and let it destroy everything that is so valuable and so important to me. See, this doesn't happen just because I want it to. It doesn't happen just because I know that it's bad. It happens when I decide, I'm gonna live differently. I'm gonna do things differently. It is all by God's Spirit that this happens. You can't live differently and not have God be a part of it. Because my natural way to live would be to go and indulge and to look at every woman that walked in front of me and to seek out pornography. That would be my natural way to live. So it's only by God's Spirit and by His power that I am able to decide and to have my conscience pricked in such a way that I want to live differently, and God gives you that power, and God changes. He gives you new eyes to see with, and a new mind to think with. Our minds and our hearts are transformed. You're constantly There's always that lure. There's always that call back into that other dark way of living. But God comes in and he shows you a different way to live and to have peace and freedom and happiness and joy and true intimacy and fulfillment.
Nowhere in the scriptures does the scriptures say that we are unlovable. And a lot of Christian approaches that are just blanket Christian approaches actually end up shaming people and pushing people further into darkness. And so the starting point of where is Jesus? Jesus is this amazing, radical, unbelievable, relentless lover who loves at the expense of his own broken heart. And what that means is, in the center of God's heart, there's not shame when he thinks of me. When God thought of me in my darkest sexual moment, in my greatest moment of infidelity, Jesus was not shaming me. Jesus was there on the cross for me. Jesus had compassion. Jesus had this intense desire to say, this is what I'm going to do to set him free, to bind up his broken heart. And the amazing thing about the gospel is that God actually takes our failure, our sin, our shame, our wickedness, our wounds, and he transforms it. And that's what the cross is all about. The cross is not just about forgiveness. The cross is our entry into a life with God, a God who embraces us, a God who doesn't shame us, a God who wants us even in our darkest moment, and then who wants to set us free to live out his passion, which is to bless the world, to live with a heart that's fully alive, to love.
There's always hope, even in the worst of it. I had a ray of hope that God had to be greater than this. Or why bother? So I brought my nothing to him. I felt like I had nothing left to give. I had no strength left. I had no self-respect left. I had no respect left with her. I just bring my nothing, and I remember praying specifically, God, I'm bringing you my nothing. If you can do anything with my nothing and make a life out of it, I'll serve you the rest of my life. And I felt in response an impression from the Holy Spirit saying, John, all that is, I made out of nothing. So today begins a whole new life for you. So in my case, he had to get me to the point where I was fully convinced I really have nothing to give you, even though I never really did. And when I really gave the nothing over and left it there and just cried out like David did and said, show me your ways. Show me how to live. Show me how to hide your word in my heart that I don't miss the mark that you set for me to live.
God is strength, and through the hard part of it was a gentle and loving reminder that even though this is hard, that he's with me, and reminding me of not of my own failure, but that I don't have the right to hold on to things. I don't have the right to stay angry and keep my resentment because I was wronged. Because if I do that, then I can't forgive, and we can't walk in freedom together.
At the moment where you feel like you've just run out of all grace and mercy with God, where you are, you know, there's such shame and there's such guilt and ugliness to your life where you can't even stand yourself, and you wonder if God could ever stand you. And it actually provides, it all actually gives you the reason to go back to pornography, and you say, well, I'm already a mess anyway. I've gone this far. I may as well continue. I think the message that always came back to me is the message that Paul received, that my grace is sufficient for you. That God's sufficiency, God is big and God is enormous, and no matter how far down this dark tunnel I travel, I've never gone so far that God can't love me and he can't rescue me.
I think it's important that we don't paint an unrealistic picture and try to hand somebody three easy steps to a happy life. You know, that's not what this is about. This is about transforming your perspective before God, allowing him to give you an entirely new value structure that's not prominent in culture, and making his heart and his ways, like David said, show me your ways, God, that I can run the path you set for me. You know, men get so destroyed, they can't even run anymore. They're fumbling all over themselves and applauding each other's, hey, you know, it's tragic to me. Show me your ways so I can run, was the cry of my heart. That's the freedom cry.